Happy holidays, everyone. This is Amanda Rucker, and you're listening to Cirrhosis, the podcast where I interview badass women who have advice to give. Hope you are all having at least a pretty okay week. I know the holidays can be a little bit rough. Maybe you're spending a little bit of time with a family member that you don't see eye to eye with, or maybe you just have to travel a really long way, and traveling during the holidays is always awful. Whatever roadblocks or struggles that you are going through, I hope that you're coming out on the other side at least okay. How about that? I am really excited for this month's episode. I interviewed Laura Burhan from the Mina Birds. I have such a friend crush on Laura. She was one of the first people I met here in Omaha when I moved here 6 years ago. And I just find her to be such a refreshing, inspiring conversation. The kind of person that isn't afraid to get in deep with you, maybe one of the first conversations you're having with her. And I love those kind of people. We cover a lot of ground in our 30 minutes of talking, from white feminism to creating change in our communities, the role that communities have in showing up for that kind of change, the role that artists have in creating or inspiring that kind of change. I really, really loved it. We actually had this talk while she was visiting over Thanksgiving and played a really beautiful set here in Omaha at a place called Outer Spaces. And I took my parents there so they could see the kind of inspirational things that are happening here in Omaha. It was a beautiful set that was capped off with an amazing dance routine by, I think, TBD Dance Collective. It was by far one of my favorite memories in Omaha. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you're enjoying the end of this crazy year, and I wish you all well for 2019. There we go. All right. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
Thank you for making the time today. I really appreciate it. I know when you come to Omaha, you probably have a million things going on.
It's wild how many friends are here in Omaha.
Yeah.
And, you know, I come out sometimes and I'm like, I'm going to be here for a week. And I don't get a chance to see, you know, maybe I see 5% or 10% of my friends.
Yeah.
Which is a testament to Omaha as a community and how many wonderful people are here.
Yeah, there are so many people. I think, I took a video of the show you did on Friday, and somebody who doesn't live in Omaha was like, how is that in Omaha? And I was like, how is it not in Omaha? Like, this is, I think what's so cool is there's so many pockets of people, and it seems like to me most people are like lifting each other up and supporting everybody.
Absolutely.
Around here. Do you, not to pit LA against Omaha, but do you feel that same way in LA, or...
There are multiple universes within the universe of LA.
Yeah.
And when I first, I think from an outsider's perspective, it's easy to see LA as really competitive and awful. And you think of it as like Hollywood and the underbelly of the music and film industry. And it does have that for sure. But I've been very lucky to find a very similar community in LA.
Oh, cool.
As there is in Omaha. The difference is that a lot of people in LA have moved there from other places.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of touring musicians, working actors who are gone a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to be in LA and miss your friends because they are in some other city or another country.
Yeah.
Or gone for 3 months because they're touring their album.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens in Omaha too.
Yeah.
I think that I really firmly believe the more that I travel, like wherever you go, you'll find your people.
Mm-hmm.
So
I always, when I think about Omaha and like, if I were ever to leave here, that I think it would be the hardest place for me to leave. I think a lot of other places I lived, like you were saying, it was a lot of people who had moved there from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that almost transient feeling was already established. And we all were like, well, I know I'll see you again. But for me here, it's a lot more, this is home. This is where you stay and you might travel. So I always kind of struggle with the thought of leaving.
Well, I will tell you firsthand, you never really leave Omaha. Omaha never really leaves you. Yeah, I was really worried about that. I mean, I wrote a song about it, that song Omaha.
I love that song. The first time you played that, I think, was at Page Turner's, and I was there. Like, not to turn this, but this is, you have been a part of some of the most, like, interesting and impactful music experiences I've had in Omaha. So,
thank you.
Yeah. But, yeah, you actually were one of the first people I met here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know if you remembered that.
I do remember that, of course. I remember you telling me about your apartment. I feel like what I remember is that it had really good light.
Oh, yes. Yes. I loved that apartment. But, yeah, it was good. Well, speaking of being back, I know you mentioned you had a conversation about kind of using art to heal. And I felt like there was a little bit of maybe, like, the artist's responsibility for putting that out there. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Or, like, communities?
Ooh, yeah, it's a really deep, I think it's a really deep conversation and one that feels really urgent right now. It feels really pertinent in Omaha specifically, and it feels really relevant in the world, particularly in the United States, right?
Yeah.
So the last album I made, Be Here Now, was written directly after the 2017 presidential inauguration. And I just watched the headlines and watched people's response to the headlines and tried to write. I wrote a record kind of from the voice of the collective consciousness.
Okay.
It was like, I called it a work of emotional journalism because it wasn't documenting the news. It was documenting people's reactions to the news.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I don't know. I mean, I think I always am aiming to dig into what's happening socially, politically, like in the collective consciousness, and then say, okay, but how can we progress from here?
Mm-hmm.
So there is some of that in that record. But I take very seriously the art or the responsibility of kind of discussing very difficult things,
mm-hmm.
And trying to make space for people to experience those things, whether that's just emotionally, and then to kind of grow from those and progress from those.
So when you are an artist putting that kind of, like, energy out there, how much is it the community also has to show up for experiencing that?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I think about the records that changed my life as a teenager, and they were records I sat alone in my bedroom with. And so part of it is taking time. So showing mm-hmm. up can mean... That can manifest itself in a lot of different ways.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like just being present, and that can mean in a room with a bunch of people or just sitting alone with art. That's an interesting question, and I think we're also distracted, you know?
Yes, they're distracted.
So it's like how we're kind of bad right now about being present, or maybe we're like too good at being present because we're like, I'm present here, and what's this tweet? Oh, what's this Facebook status? Oh, what's this person saying? And it's fracturing.
Yeah.
To like the individual, but also to the society.
I was having this kind of conversation with a coworker of mine where I was reacting to every tweet out there, you know, especially around really trying to show up with so many, like, the stat that always really I struggle with is, 52% of white women who voted for Trump. And that stat weighs on me so hard. And mm-hmm. so I try really hard to show up for all these things. But that meant I was scouring Twitter for, like, the right way to show up, the right thing to say. And I was reacting to every single thing I was reading. And then I would, like, go out into the world and put it, you know, say something or whatever. But maybe the person I was talking to hadn't read the same tweet, like, shocker. And
right.
so they kind of were like, why are you saying it that way? Like, what are you doing? And So I was realizing I had to show up in my own way and not just react to what other people were doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I find it really interesting. A friend of mine, he's a black man, posted that graphic, and it was the women voters, and it was particularly in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And a white friend of his, a woman, she responded and she said, "Why are you posting this? Why are you being so divisive? Like, it's not about race." And it was sort of classic white feminist response. Mm-hmm. And he said, he basically was like, "You might have voted the way that I voted, mm-hmm. but that doesn't let you off the hook. You're responsible as a white woman to talk to other white women,
yeah.
because clearly they're not listening to people of color." Mm-hmm. And I find that very often, even in Omaha, you know, you see examples of that where sometimes the community, particularly the community of color, says, "Hey, this is a problem. This is hurtful." And you come up with, I was talking to actually a therapist the other day, and she said, "Yeah, it's ego work. What we need to do is ego work." Mm-hmm. Because people are very prideful and people want to believe that they're doing or saying the right thing. And I find that what we have is a whole lot of people who are clinging to their righteousness and clinging to want to be right because they've read all the tweets and mm-hmm. they've done all the research and they really have done whatever it is. And I guess, like, when it comes down to what I would classify as healing work, like, what does that look like? To me, it's not necessarily finding resolution. It's just making space. So it's making space to be wrong. That includes me. It's making space for flexibility, which is to grow and get better. It's making space for other people's anger or pain or whatever it is, and to not feel like I need to fix it. So I think that oftentimes when we think traditionally, like, what is healing or what does healing look like? And we think of it as better, no conflict, no pain. But I think that's just really inaccurate. And that's, like, part of the reason why people are unable to be happy in their daily lives is because you're like, "Well, oh, but this isn't right, and this isn't right, and this isn't right." Well, nothing's ever fucking right, you mm-hmm. know? Like, we have minor victories, and then we have losses, and then we have depressions, and we have all this shit that's never right. But, so I think that healing and ultimately, like, happiness and peace, what it looks like is making space for the muck, the shit of life, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. I loved all that, but that one part where it's not, you're not particularly looking for resolution. And have you ever read Celeste Hadley? Mm-hmm. Have you heard of her? She just wrote a book on, it's called How to Have Conversations That Matter.
Ooh, I love this.
It's brilliant. I will see if I still have it. Yeah, I will definitely give it to you. And she, I mean, the whole thing is about, we spend so much of our time trying to be the next person that talks or be the most important person in the conversation and control the conversation that we forget to just listen. Mm-hmm. And that should just be kind of our goal in most of our human interactions, is to listen to the other person. And I think that a lot of that could be happening right now.
Absolutely. My dad sent me this really beautiful quote, and he said, you know, right now, people are listening to decide what they want to say next instead of listening to listen.
Yep.
And we have a real problem with that. And I really am interested in reading that book. I have been, you know, I've been paying attention to some conversations that the Omaha community has had about appropriation or maybe inappropriate use of language or voice mm-hmm. as an artist. Mm-hmm. And I really have been just trying to observe and listen and see what people are thinking and feeling. And I've been talking to people and seeing if there's some way to facilitate some kind of conversations around that happen in person that mm-hmm. maybe don't just happen on the internet.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a couple of different people I know, people who, you know, Maggie Wood, who's director of Inclusive Communities, and I certainly would want, if there's something to be done there, I'd want to help facilitate it. I definitely think it probably should be led by people of color and not me, but if there's some conversation that could happen.
I totally agree with that. Get off the internet. There's been so many times I've wanted to comment on something, and I think maybe once or twice it's actually worked out for me, you know, right. Not just for me, sorry. It's worked out that, like, we both can see each other's sides, right. But, yeah, I'm trying to have more of those hard conversations in person, even, especially with loved ones.
Right.
You know, and I encourage, like, people to call me out, too. It's hard to hear a lot of times, but, yeah.
It's hard. I really have made an effort in my Facebook world.
Oh, yeah.
you can't, in some ways, you can't control your feed, right? Because the robots are controlling, yes. The algorithms are controlling what we see. And anytime I like something, it's like, oh, give her more of that. She likes that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the ultimate horrific drug, like self-made drug.
Yeah.
But I've really been trying to keep relationships open with friends and family who I disagree with. And I try to weigh in a respectful way, especially if I see someone saying something that's racist, or even just to share. I have friends who live in predominantly white conservative communities back on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And if I can say, hey, I just want to say I have, you know, a very dear trans friend, and this is her experience, and I just want to share that with you. So as you're considering this, just... So I've tried to, number one, speak from my own experience, and when I can, help amplify other people's experience, mm-hmm. who may not have the same audience. And that's, I feel like getting back to your original question, which is like, that's what art can help us to do, which is, you know, get voices in front of new audiences.
Yeah. So speaking of like... using your voice and being... So you're originally from the East Coast, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I know you used to live in D.C. How was it living in such, like, a politically charged community? Like, that kind of hotbed of everything. To maybe, you know, versus maybe living in Omaha, you know, a state that's going to vote pretty much one way.
Well, it's really funny. So D.C. is, like, 90 to 95% Democratic.
Oh, okay.
As a city / state, if only it had... they're never gonna give them states' rights. They're never gonna give them senators because they will get two Democratic senators.
Interesting.
So that's why it probably hasn't passed so far. It's so obvious and annoying and politically charged. But living in D.C., you know, you go to a party and everybody would always say, "Oh, what do you do?" Which is funny because people say that in L.A. and people are like, I can't believe it. They're always asking, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm from D.C. That's what everybody's always asked. And usually people were like, oh, I run a nonprofit, or I work for a think tank, or I work at a university, or I'm special counsel to a senator, you know. And it's really... So it didn't necessarily feel politically charged as much as just politically aware. Mm. And... living in Omaha, I mean, Omaha is a blue island in a sea of red. And so it has a similar feel,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that the people here are really interested in effecting change and working towards it and doing what they can to support vulnerable communities and to make space for people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and even in D.C., they would have, like, people had blind spots.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think last time I was in D.C. was, like, 8th grade 4-H trip.
Uh-huh.
So I always envision it, like, everyone's a senator, and I'm always talking to somebody. But I also watched too much House of Cards, I think. So
yeah.
That's trippy for me. But
yeah.
So slight shift in conversation, but I was wondering, you know, we're talking about using art to heal, and especially your approach to your own songwriting. What do you listen to when you're feeling kind of overwhelmed by, like, the world at the moment?
That's a really good question. I tend to, like, turn off music.
Okay.
I have recently, which is, I go through these phases, but I tend to do a lot of driving,
mm-hmm.
To tour, or else apparently I'm a secret long haul trucker. If only I, like, carted things around the country, I could make money doing it. But I love to listen to podcasts. I tend to listen to science podcasts. I love Radiolab.
Oh, I love Radiolab.
Yeah. Invisibilia. Mm-hmm. The sort of space where science meets, like, the human experience. And where you're, you know, they're talking about, I don't know, some tiny weird DNA thing. And the next thing you know, you're bawling your eyes out.
Yes.
But, so I tend to do that because I think I like to remember, like, I was thinking this morning about this sort of, you know, these terrible forest fires are raging in California right now, and the president has blamed the Forestry Service. Yeah. And I was thinking this morning about science and the science behind climate change, and thinking, you know, at the end of science is truth, right? At the end of capitalism is money. Mm-hmm. And so why wouldn't we trust science if the aim is to get to truth, right? Why did I say that? Oh, because I was thinking about what I like to listen to, mm-hmm, when I'm trying to sort of zen out. I listen to a lot of Pema Chodron. Do you know her?
No.
She's a Buddhist nun.
Okay.
She's written a lot of great books, and she's given a lot of great talks. And she has this really incredible one. It's about conflict between people, particularly political.
Hmm.
I wish I could, I'll have to look it up and I will tell you what it is. It is a must listen to podcast. Okay. Or just a talk, I guess it's on YouTube. I tend to like go back to like Philip Glass or, you know, Joni Mitchell.
Yes. Yeah.
But then also, I've really gotten into, I have such a fraught relationship with Spotify, as I'm sure most musicians do.
Oh, I bet you do, yeah.
Like, thanks for not paying me any money for my plays, and now nobody buys records, and now the music industry is collapsing. But at the same time, I really love my Discovery Weekly playlist.
Yeah.
And also, like, all of my friends who were DJs who no longer have jobs because, you know, FM radio is, and even on internet radio is kind of going the way of the dodo.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that infuriating, but at the same time I do like to put in like some good Ethiopian jazz from the 70s and see what new music it recommends to me.
Yeah, I think I mean, speaking of Spotify, so my husband and I he's recently really gotten into vinyl, like any good hipster would. Mm-hmm. And we have been purposely, like, you know, I think in the world of minimalism too, people like got rid of a lot of like CDs and tapes and all that stuff. But I think when something takes up space in your home, you pay better attention to it.
Absolutely.
So when I, you know, look at my Spotify, like, last year in your music, it's all kind of music that I didn't really pay attention to, but I put on when I was working.
Right.
And I really wanted it to move back to, like, what are those classics that I'm listening to? What are those albums I'm buying and, like, sitting on my floor with headphones and actually listening to?
Absolutely. And I find it enraging that what we are seeing become really popular in Spotify is basically glorified elevator music.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's really nice, easy listening, electronic pop with, like, pretty girl voices or, like, easygoing guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, I have this question, which is like, is that what people really want to listen to, or is it just that it's something they don't have to pay attention to?
Mm-hmm.
And I have some friends in LA, for example, it's this like intense queer feminist band called Object to Subject.
Oh.
And their stuff, like, you have to listen to it because it had like searing guitars and intense drum beats. They dance and like drum, like the front three members. It's really intense, and all of a sudden it'll just like shift gears and turn into a different song.
Huh.
You're like, and I love listening to that right now, which is like music that makes you pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like, hey, we're here now, you know.
That's like, I can't listen to podcasts at work because if I'm typing or reading or whatever, I have to turn one of them off. I can't right. handle all that in my brain. So yeah, that's the kind of music I want to start paying attention to, is music I can't maybe work to.
Right.
I have to pay attention to it. And I think, yeah, in the world of streaming, it's so easy to just push play and not pay attention.
Right. Yeah.
Let me think. Well, I feel that's about 30 minutes. So yeah, that was a great conversation. So Yay. Thanks, Laura. Thanks for making time for me.
Thanks for coming over.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say before we sign off? Pay your artists.
Pay artists. No, I guess the closing note would just be to be patient with yourself. I was thinking about this actually last night. I woke up at 2:30 in the morning, and occasionally I'll wake up with, like, I call it existential dread.
Yes.
Which is like, oh my God, I'm a person in a human body, and one day I'm going to die, and what does it all mean? And we're so tiny in the universe, and how big is the universe? And, you know, like, you go down that black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, I've been listening to a lot of women specifically talking about aging, and a lot of fears around aging in a society that doesn't value aging.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, man, I released the first Minor Birds record right as I turned 30. And at the time I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll just be a late bloomer, thinking that like 30 was old.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself last night in the middle of the night, I'm so excited to be just a continuous bloomer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm excited to be someone who decides to blossom into some new thing in my 40s, in my 70s. And like, those are the people who are inspiring. And I think that we have the power to create space for ourselves to be those types of people. And that's, to me, like the ultimate healing work.
That was beautiful. That was a great way to end this. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. I think I'll be re-listening to that a lot this next year as I set more goals to be more intentional and thoughtful with everyone around me. Hope you have a great rest of your holiday season, and hope your 2018 was happy.